Hello, and welcome to This Thing Called Life, a podcast dedicated to sharing stories about acts of giving, kindness, compassion, and humanity. Your host, Andy Johnson, will introduce you to powerful stories about organ, eye, and tissue donation from individuals, families, and healthcare teams whose experiences will inspire you and remind you that while life is hard, unpredictable, and imperfect, it's also beautiful. We are so happy you're here. Now, let's join the show.
Hey, everybody. This is Andy Johnson. I am your host of This Thing Called Life. And listen, I am so excited to be back. We took a brief hiatus because, quite frankly, this thing called life was lifing, and we had to take a pause. But we're back, and we're excited to bring you the real stories of donation and transplantation and how it changes lives. And honestly, it really all boils down to ordinary people who want to do something good in our world in their own way. And so we are excited to bring you these stories, these conversations, and just give you really good resources and information. So thank you for being here with us. Welcome, everyone, to This Thing Called Life. I am your host, Andy Johnson, and I want to thank you so much for listening. Please join me in welcoming today Miss Carmelita Jones. Hello, Carmelita. Thank you so much for being here with us today. How are you?
It's my absolute pleasure to be here. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good, 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 good. So before we talk about what led you to needing a kidney transplant, I want to hear about you. I want to hear about who is Miss Carmelita Jones, and just tell us about you.
Who is Carmelita Jones? That's an interesting question, because sometimes she don't even know.
I get it.
I'm very fun loving. Mm-hmm. I hold myself as fairly intelligent. I am very passionate about the things that I love, mm-hmm. and the people that I love. Mm-hmm. I am a very giving, loving person. But I do want those things in return. Mm-hmm. If I give you my love, I'm giving you all of my love, mm-hmm. and I need you to be able to handle it because I want it back. Mm-hmm. I want it reciprocated.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. How old are you?
I'm 44.
44. And what do you do for a living? What do you do?
I'm in early childhood education.
So you're working with children, with babies.
Yeah. My little babies, my little snickerdoodles.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
But it's quite a transition from what I used to do. I used to work at a casino.
You did?
I did. So I went from babysitting the old men to babysitting the little babies.
Were you babysitting them at the craps table? What did you work?
I babysat them at all of the poker games and blackjack.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine this personality at blackjack?
I can. Wow. I love that. So you mentioned that was your previous career. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, without giving too much of your story away, mm-hmm. I would just assume that you've had some challenges that kind of forced you to make some changes in your life.
Major changes in my life.
Right. So how did you arrive at this place of needing a kidney transplant?
About 4.5 years ago, I was involved in a car accident, mm-hmm. coming home from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I stopped in, I had them transport me to Lexington. Mm-hmm. When I got there, I ended up being there for a few days. And they're like, your numbers are just like crazy. I'm like, okay.
And your numbers, what numbers?
You know, when you have a car accident, they test everything. They mm-hmm. test your blood. They test, you know, like they just test everything when you have an accident.
Blood pressure, heart rate.
Like GFR, GFL, like they test everything. And they're like, these numbers are kind of wonky. And I'm like, okay. So I ended up having to go to the doctor again after the accident. And it was still in regards to all of that. And they admitted me. So at this time, the doctors came in and they said, we're going to have a nephrologist look at your numbers. Mm-hmm. And he came in and he said, oh, I'm going to follow you. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. He said, we're going to do our first appointment in February because this is like January. I'm like, not a problem. Mm-hmm. So in February, his mother passed. So he had to cancel that appointment. Mm-hmm. We rescheduled for March. March came and I had a family member pass. Mm-hmm. So I ended up not going to that appointment, and I wasn't able to get in until May, which was like just after my birthday. And I'm like, all right, cool, that's what's up. So I go in May, and the nephrologist tells me, you're in kidney failure. So I went from like stage 3, we need to watch your numbers, to stage 5, we need to get this on the ball. We need to get a fistula because that has to have time to mature and like everything now.
And what is a fistula for our listeners?
A fistula is more people are familiar with like a port. Mm-hmm. So a fistula is where they take your vein and your artery and they combine them to make one space big enough for the needles.
Okay. For dialysis.
Yes. The other option is called a graft, where it's basically a silicone tube that they implant in your arm. But they don't, you know, anything natural would be better than something synthetic. So they really prefer to do a fistula and give it time to mature to where it's big enough for the 2 15-gauge needles to fit without touching. Okay. The inch-long coffee stirrers that they have to put in your arm without touching.
Wow. So you receive this news. You have moved from stage 3, which I was that following the car accident, they're thinking you're stage 3 to you get into this appointment.
Right.
Like, around May. Like
4 months later, I'm right. Stage 5, right.
Prior to the accident, did you have any, what were you diagnosed with a condition?
Diabetes, high blood pressure.
So type 2 diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And very blessed to have a doctor that knows me and has known me most of my life. So he's telling me the whole time, like, Carmelita, you need to pay attention to this. And I just really didn't, because like my grandmother had diabetes, both of my, you know, all of my grandparents had diabetes, and it just meant you take a shot before you eat. Like, right. And as much as I hate needles, like they didn't wince or cry out in agony when they had to do it. So I'm looking at diabetes as it's not that big a deal,
right.
Just because everybody I know has diabetes. My mom had gestational diabetes. My grandma, like I said, my grandma, my granddad, everybody had diabetes. So it just wasn't a big deal.
Right.
And even though my doctor said, you need to watch it, I'm like, I'm watching it till I can't see it no more because I ate it. I'm on a seafood diet. I see it, I eat it, I do what I want.
Which, you know what, that's the real, that's the truth. That's, I think, how many of us live, especially in our younger years.
Right. I was like, 26 when I was diagnosed with diabetes.
We're invincible at that age.
Oh, it's just diabetes. Whatever. I'll be all
right. Right. Right.
And if, even though he told me to watch it, if I realized the damage the sugar in my blood was doing to my body,
right,
it would have been definitely more serious, because at this point, my whole existence depends on, let me reference these two coffee stirrers that I have to have put in my arm every other day for the rest of my life, unless I get a kidney.
Until you get a kidney.
Until I get a kidney. Thank you for that correction, sister.
You're welcome. But you, so you bring up a really good point, just talking about diabetes. You know, we know that diabetes impacts the Black community at a much, much higher rate than other folks in this country. But I also want just listeners to know, right now, there's almost 104,000 people who are waiting for organ transplants in this country. And so that includes hearts, kidneys, lungs, liver, pancreas.
Right.
Of that 104,000, almost 90% of the people on that list need kidneys like you, which is staggering.
Yeah, we just don't realize the damage we do our own bodies. Right. And high blood pressure is another major factor.
Yes.
So it's just, and not to specify one particular group, but, you know, African Americans suffer from high blood pressure because of our history. Like, literally, on the slave boats, when we were brought over to America, you were more likely to survive that trip if you had high blood pressure. And a lot of people just don't realize that the African Americans that are here and have survived, they survive that trip because they have a propensity towards higher blood pressure. So it's not something like, it's something that, you know, so many of us live to eat as opposed to eating to live. And if it doesn't taste good, I don't want it. And we ate all the pork because that's what tasted good, and that's what we had left.
Right. We ate what was
was available.
Our ancestors, like, and that has just, it's just transferred generation to generation.
Exactly.
Like, that's, the salt, the foods that are high in sodium and, and those types of things. Right.
So, like, so many of us, you know, you eat what you were raised on in so many cases, unless you make that choice as you grow up to not do that, which is hard.
Make better choices.
Which is hard because that's what you've always done. That's what you've always known to do.
Right. And, you know, as many, like many of us here in this country, like, we, when we celebrate, we're eating food.
Eating food.
When we're in mourning,
we eat food.
When we're grieving,
we eat food.
Right. And
food is killing us.
Yes.
Literally.
Right. Right. So what would you, just sitting in the seat that you're in right now, what do you think we need to do different?
Well, we need to teach our children. We need to teach our children first and foremost, so we don't give them our bad habits, because that's what they are. They're habits.
And we need to say it, right? Like, I think we don't talk about it, right? But you're right.
And we need to first make that decision for ourselves. And then not only teach our children these things, but show our children these things. Because they have to learn from an early age, you know, okay, I understand you might not like green beans, but we have to eat green beans. Mm-hmm. And they can't be the overcooked, soggy green beans with potatoes all in them and ham hocks like everybody used to.
Right.
They have to, you know, they have to have some nutritional value. And we need to teach those things to our babies, because our babies are growing up and making the same decisions. If you look at obesity in our young people, like, it's off the charts. It's ridiculous. Right. And it's because they're following our habits.
Right.
They're not doing this on their own. They can't go cook and buy for themselves. Right. They're doing and eating what we give them.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, we've seen this rise in children being diagnosed with diabetes at much younger age,
yeah.
which speaks to what you were just talking about. And I also see, though, there's this slow movement where we're kind of not giving away our power. We're empowering ourselves. We're seeing more community gardens in mm-hmm. in neighborhoods where there aren't, you know, grocery stores where we can get fresh produce and those types of things. So we're seeing that movement. We're seeing more just organizations here in Cincinnati, Center for Closing the Health Gap. They mm-hmm. teach the community about healthy cooking and those type of things.
Farming.
Right. And I think, I mean, it makes sense. And I think those are the things that'll move us forward.
Yeah, definitely.
To break out of that. But you're right. And we, you know, we heard that you were on a panel a few months ago, and we talked a lot about that, about changing those habits and doing something different. So you have arrived at this place of needing a kidney.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through. I mean, you just got here today. You just left dialysis.
Right. If I don't have any energy, that's probably what it is right now.
Right. Which is okay. And I appreciate you taking the time to come in here and do this. But
this is very important. It's just my life. It's my life.
Right. And this is very important. This is real.
Yeah.
But walk us through. What does a dialysis day look like for you?
So dialysis days start fairly early. I usually have to be awake around 6:30 mm-hmm. because fortunately I'm only 2 minutes away from my dialysis clinic. But that was by design.
Mm-hmm.
I chose that one because it was close. Starts about 6 a.m. I get up and my medicine, it runs through me, so I spend a lot of time in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And after I've done that and got myself together, I tried down the dialysis, and they have become like a second family because I'm with them so much.
Sure.
I'm with them 3 days a week, 4.5 to 5 hours a day. So that's my Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Mm.
Typically, when I get off of dialysis, after I've more than likely cried because I had to get these big needles in my arm, I go get something to eat and I go home, and that is my day. I usually wake up around 7.
Mm.
By that time, it's time to prepare for the next day because I also have a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
In child care, early childhood education. But I had to change my job because I couldn't continue to be in the casino. You know, COVID hit. It was so many things that's been going on in the last few years. COVID hit. I can't be around as many people.
Right.
And even though, you know, my babies are little petri dishes because that's what they are.
They are at that age.
It's the same petri dishes. It's not the constant change of new people in and out in your face, coughing, putting chips in their mouth, putting them down. They like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Everybody touching, they take all their chips and go to the bathroom because they don't want to leave them on the table. Like, it's all of this stuff. So, yeah. And, you know, everybody just doesn't have basic hygienic manners, like cover your mouth when you cough. Like, I shouldn't have to tell grown people to cover their mouth when they cough, but you do. And in that situation, I couldn't possibly work in there. So my lifestyle has changed that way as well, because I can't make as much money as I did because I can't do the type of work that I did.
Right.
I mean, I went from making $72,000 a year to making maybe 24. My social security is only 18. But I do have a part-time job, and that puts in a little more, but it's very tight. Yeah. It is very tight.
Which is an added stressor.
Which is an added stressor, because now I'm not doing the things I'm used to doing. I'm not able to travel like I'm used to travel. I'm not able to go when I'm, like, when I found out I was in kidney failure or looking at kidney failure, I was coming home from out of town. I've not been this stationary since I was 16. And now, like, I just can't do the things that I'm used to doing. I can't afford the life that I'm used to living. I can't spend that much time away from my dialysis clinic. Like, I literally have to be here every other day. I might miss one treatment for something that I would deem very important, because that raises your chance of dying about 50%. If you miss one treatment. So I have to ensure that I can get those treatments wherever I am.
Right.
Right. Whatever I'm doing.
So you've been waiting how long now?
About 144, so about 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're located in Cincinnati, Ohio. So.
And if you would like to contact Bree at Christ Hospital, her phone number is 513-585-1427 if you are interested in living organ donation. I've also found out a lot in that world that people don't realize you can be and live a full, healthy life and donate a piece of your liver because your liver regenerates, or a kidney, because like 1 in 700 people are born with one kidney anyway. And people don't even realize that.
Right. They don't.
So they're like, in being this advocate that I have become because of my circumstances, I'm walking up to people like, hey, they say, how are you doing? I'm good, but I need a kidney. Can I have one of yours? Like, I'm really having this conversation with people that I've known my whole life.
But you know what? What you're doing too is, you know, one thing I know, and I'm sure you know, about the Black community is a lot of times we don't like to talk about what is ailing us.
What's really going on.
Yeah. And so by you doing that and by you being as vocal as you are, you're normalizing that conversation. And right. It's like saying, you know what, this is okay. And it's okay that I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And we need to do more of that.
Yeah, definitely. I learned that I used to work at the VA as well. I've had a lot of careers that I walked away from. But I had a manager who she asked me, how are you? And I told her, and she said, Carmelita, I really don't care that you're having a bad day. That's just a colloquialism. And I said, wow. I said, okay. But it needs to be normalized. Hey, how are you doing? I'm actually not having a great day. I don't feel well today, or I'm heavy today.
Right.
I have a lot going on today.
Right.
And we need to be there for each other's sanity. And like,
right.
If I'm being real with you and I'm just telling you like, yo, I'm having a bad day today, or I'm having a hard day. You know, I try not to make it too heavy because, you know, a lot of people don't want to get hit with that, but I'm having a rough day.
Right.
And I might cry in a second. Like, give me a minute. I might cry.
Right. Right. And that's okay.
Because life is heavy, and being an adult is hard. Mm-hmm. And I've just really, adulting is hard.
It is hard.
It requires so much patience, and a lot of times we don't take that time to take care of ourselves, to be real with ourselves enough to even say, like, adulting is hard. I want to move home.
That's so real. That's so real. So on those days, who's the tribe around you that keeps you lifted? Do you feel like you have a tribe?
Oh, I definitely have a tribe. Okay. I have so many people that I could turn to and say, you know, this is rough. This is what's going on. I'm having a hard time dealing with. I have my dearest friend in the world, Kina, who I call her my sister, and so many people don't even realize that she's not my blood sister.
But she's your sister.
But she is my sister. Like, yes. She has walked me through so many days, and I hope that I've been that for her as well. I have my mom, my dad. My stepmom is an integral part of my life. My siblings. I have a brother and a sister on my mother's side. I have two brothers and a sister on my dad's side. You know, and then I have Kina, who is the only person I deal with every day, regardless of whatever is going on.
Yeah.
I have, and my dialysis team is wonderful. Oh my God, they're so wonderful. Some of them have actually dealt with the other side of dialysis, so they have, they have an understanding beyond this is my job. And that is definitely a plus.
And shout out to the dialysis clinics all over and just the workers there.
Personally, shout out to Mount Auburn, DaVita, my people.
Nice.
They're amazing.
Now, if people wanted to hear more about your story, do you have a Facebook page? How would people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I have a Facebook page. It's Carmelita C. Jones, C A R M E L I T A space C period Jones, J O N E S. And my Instagram is Carmyar, Carmy, like Yankee, AR, the number one. If anybody ever has any questions, you can inbox me on either of those. I'm very open. I'll talk to you. Just don't call me if I don't know you. That would be weird.
and again, people want to get tested to be a living kidney donor for you, Carmelita. How do they do that?
Contact Bree at Christ Hospital, area code 513-585-1427. They don't really give me any updates, but you can contact her. If you don't feel comfortable letting me know you did, that's fine. Just contact Bree and she'll send you. The first step is a packet. They'll send you a packet. So even if you feel unsure at first, you have every opportunity to step back and rethink if that's what you choose to do. I definitely won't hold it against anybody.
And it's a completely anonymous process.
Exactly. It's an anonymous process. Right. And the first step is getting a packet, filling it out, and sending it back.
Right.
It doesn't hurt. But that's the first step, filling out a packet.
Right. And, you know, what a beautiful way to help another person who is going through something. And if you have the ability to do that, what a awesome gift to give.
And a lot of people feel after they have donated, they feel more fulfilled in giving life to someone, even if it's an altruistic donation. If you don't know that person, it's still that good feeling of helping someone. I remember the first time I felt that, it was I fed the homeless. Mm-hmm. And like, you get up early and you're tired and oh, it's cold and da 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 da, and I'm standing under a bridge all day. Mm-hmm. But the feeling of helping people,
right,
is right, so amazing. It just, it feels good. It feels like you have purpose.
Yes.
It feels like your day-to-day struggle, it gives you a new insight on your day-to-day struggles, because there's always somebody that has it worse than you. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, I don't like these shoes. You have shoes. Oh, I don't like the way my feet look. You have both feet.
Right.
There's somebody that doesn't have one.
Right.
And, you know, my skin is, you know, whatever you nitpick at yourself about. Mm-hmm. It's somebody always out there that has it worse. And it puts a new perspective on life, helping someone else. Mm-hmm. Even, especially when you don't even know that person.
Right.
It's just a different type of, I did that.
Right.
And
you made it better for someone else.
And without looking for applause
or looking for something.
Looking
back.
For something in return.
Right. It's,
I did that just because I'm a damn good person. Mm-hmm. Not to mm-hmm. toot my own horn.
But toot toot.
But I'm a good person. Whoop whoop.
So one, you know, as we finish up, you know, the one thing I want to mention is you connected with an organization here called Off the List mm-hmm. through your journey.
Darcy Gibson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what has that been like for you?
Has been an amazing, Off the List has been an amazing resource. She has so much information. She actually walked this walk with her father,
right,
and decided that there isn't anything in this space. This space needs to be filled. And she filled it.
Talk about purpose.
Baby.
Darcy
Gibson is the woman.
Yes.
She she's such a phenomenal resource for information, for these are people that can help you. Mm-hmm. This is a organization that I know of that can be helpful. She every month we meet the first Thursday of the month, and you know, we have
recipients
and recipient champions, and they are every month we have a speaker. Mm-hmm. We've talked to a couple of people that have given me some FaceTime on television, mm-hmm. where I'm able to share my story some on, you know, and I have that platform. And I thank Darcy and Life Center so much for those opportunities. Mm-hmm. Because one way or another, we're getting this kidney.
Yes. Yes.
And
that's when we first met. We did a show together to share your story.
Exactly.
And
that whole thing was because of Darcy. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. she put you in the right room, in the right space. And fortunately, I had the right personality to be able to try really hard to take it a step further.
Right. Right.
And see it through to completion.
Yeah.
Total fruition.
What I have found in working with Darcy is she is so so genuine, in that she wants to keep people motivated who often are ready to quit.
Because there are so many times where I'm like, Darcy, girl, right, you got too much energy. I don't feel it. I'm not feeling it today. And here you come all happy and shit. And she just laughs and like, come on, Carmelita, we're going to do it. I'm like, girl, leave me alone. But she's so infectious and so genuine.
She really is.
When you don't feel like fighting, she will fight for you.
Yeah.
Because there are days when I do not feel like fighting.
Right.
But I know I have this team of people around me that will fight with me, fight for me, make sure I have everything I need to get everything I need done. Mm-hmm. And Darcy is definitely an integral part of that team.
Yes. So if people are interested in learning more about Off the List, you can visit getoffthelist.org. It's a tremendous organization, tremendous resources. I'm honored to be a board member and just, you know, meeting all the people like you, Carmelita, who, you know,
make your life better.
Make my life better every day. I love it. So is there anything that you'd like to share as we close today? And I want to say thank you. I know you're not feeling great today. I know you just left dialysis and came here, and I appreciate you doing that. And I know there's listeners who needed to hear what you had to say today. So thank you. Thank you for that. But what would you like to say?
It's my absolute pleasure. Okay. Anytime you need a word, I will give you several.
You've been amazing.
If anyone is interested in live kidney donation, please contact Bree at Christ Hospital, 513-585-1427. Even if you just have questions about what it entails, what you need to do, you can contact her. You can contact me on Facebook or Instagram. And do something good for somebody today. It'll make you feel better. It's not only for them.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? Just know you've done something good for somebody today just by doing this, by showing up and just sharing what you had on your heart. I believe that's probably motivating someone who's probably kept this to themselves and just think they got to walk through this in the dark.
Yeah, you're definitely not alone.
Right.
There are people out here that will help. There will be people out here who will help you see the silver lining. There are people out here that will help you see when things look bleak.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're all in this together. So, Carmelita, thank you. Get some rest today. Appreciate you. And just, you know, I know there's a lot happening, and just know that there's a lot of people praying for you and rooting for you and fighting for you. So
yeah,
thank you for being a warrior.
By the time this airs, I will be in that number.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
I'm claiming Christmas.
All right, claim it.
New Year's at the very least.
Okay, I love it. All right, girl, thank you so much. And one more time.
Bree at Christ Hospital, 513-585-1427. Any and all questions.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I appreciate you. And I want to leave you with this. There are 113,628 people who are waiting and wanting to live full, healthy, robust lives. But that's not possible because they're waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. For me personally, I know three people on this list. One is a father, husband. He's my best friend's baby brother. His children are taking off in this world. One of his children has just started in education. One is a Division I athlete. The other one is getting ready to go off to college and do big things. And their dad's waiting for a heart transplant. I have another friend. She is funny. She is super smart. She loves her family and friends, and she has this infectious laugh. She's quick-witted. But she's also exhausted because dialysis is wearing her out. She has been hooked up to that machine 3 days a week for almost 4 years now. And she's only 44 years old and she needs a kidney. And then finally, there's this young woman that I had the pleasure of meeting. She is soft spoken. She's a loving mom of two young boys. And her boys, they want to play with mom. They want to go on vacation with mom. They're waiting for that day that they can play in the ocean together and just do all those things, you know, running and jumping and playing and, you know, exploring the world. And she's on dialysis waiting for a kidney. So she can't do that with her boys. Again, these are people with families who love them and want to live life with them. And I bet you know someone too who could be experiencing this. So we're here. It's a new year. It's 2024. We can make a commitment to do some good for others. We can do that by registering to be a donor when we are at the local BMV or DMV, when renewing our driver's license or state ID. You can also do it by going to registerme.org. It's very simple and quick. And you could do that right now, registerme.org. And then share the decision with your family. Let them know what you want to do and how you can help someone else so that they can honor that decision and that choice. And as always, if you need more information, you can visit lifepassiton.org. Again, I want to thank you for listening and also just leave you with this reminder to please be kind to yourself and to others. Thank you so much and take care.
This episode is brought to you by Life Center. You have the potential to help save and enhance the lives of others, those who suffer from chronic illness or the effects of traumatic events. Statistics have shown that a new name is added to the national waiting list every 10 minutes. You have the opportunity to help others and save lives. You have the power to donate life. By designating your decision to become a donor, you have the opportunity to change the lives of many and save up to 8 lives. Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana say yes to donation by registering to become an organ, eye, or tissue donor today. Go to lifepassiton.org for more information. Thanks to LifeCenter for their continued support. Thank you for listening to This Thing Called Life. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast to make sure you get updates on all new episodes. And we would truly appreciate it if you would share, like, or give us a review to help us grow.